This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Welcome to Sports in Review. No matter your favorite game, we promise to deliver more in-depth sports reporting than we could ever do during the week. Scores, stats, highlights, and more from local, college, and national leagues. All on Sports in Review, coming up next on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Sports in Review, and I'm your reader, Doug Campbell, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading sports articles from the Journal-Gazette, copyright 2025, from September 26th through October 2nd. Beginning now with September 26th. In Islanders' top overall pick, top rookie to watch in the NHL, by Steve Wino, the AP. Matthew Schaefer, being the first NHL number one pick out of the Ontario Hockey League since Connor McDavid in 2015, is pressure enough. Then there's following Connor Bedard and Macklin Celebrini into the league. Bedard with Chicago and Celebrini with San Jose immediately were put into prominent roles. Bedard won the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year, and Celebrini finished third in the voting. Taken atop the draft by the New York Islanders, Schaefer may not be in that conversation this season through little fault of his own. He is a defenseman, a position that traditionally requires a longer, steeper learning curve, and the team is not going to rush a potential franchise cornerstone of the future. "We're going to give him time," said Coach Patrick Waugh, who made the all-rookie team as a goalie on the way to the Hall of Fame. "We're going to be extremely patient with him. He's a phenomenal kid, has great values, he's very humble. It was fun in that first conversation to see him. He looks you in the eyes, and you could tell he wants to learn and he wants to be the best he can be." Schaefer, who just turned 18, is not alone, as most of the top picks in this year's draft need more experience. A look at the top of the NHL rookie class. Schaefer. Waugh was Colorado's coach in 2013 when Nathan MacKinnon was a top pick with big expectations. Waugh said he plans to follow a similar approach, starting Schaefer lower in the lineup and getting the chance to earn more ice time. Schaefer opened training camp on the third defensive pair alongside veteran Scott Mayfield. "My ears are wide open for him to let me know what I need to do better," Schaefer said. The Islanders considered it a collective effort to help Schaefer acclimate to life in the pros and the hope of going first in the draft. "Obviously, there's going to be some sort of pressure on him," center Bo Horvat said. "If anybody's going to handle it, it's going to be him. He's a very likable kid and easy to get along with right away, so he's going to fit in to our group really well." Ivan Demidov and the Canadiens. How much did hockey-mad Montreal care about Demidov signing an NHL contract and arriving from Russia late last season? There was a live stream dedicated to his international flight landing in Toronto on the way to join the team. "It was like, oh man, this is crazy," Captain Nick Suzuki said. Demidov, the fifth pick in the 2024 draft, got a head start by playing in two regular season and five playoff games last spring. He is a prohibitive Calder favorite, according to BetMGM Sportsbook. "It's super impressive to see someone have that much talent at that age, and he obviously had a great start with us and had some nice moments in the playoffs as well," Suzuki said. "I'm looking forward to seeing what he can bring to this roster this year." Michael Misa with the Sharks. Pick right behind Schaefer, Misa joins a talented young core in San Jose, headlined by Celebrini and Will Smith. "He's an awesome kid," Celebrini said. "There's a reason he went second overall. He's a special player." Upon getting drafted, Misa said he intended to play in the NHL right away. General manager Mike Greer expects Misa to play to dictate that. "He wants to be the best," Greer said. "He wants to play against the best. I'm sure this is what he wants to do, but we're not going to hand him anything. He's got to come into training camp and try and take a job and earn a spot." Finally, Ryan Leonard, the Capitals. Like Dimyadov, Leonard broke into the NHL late last season playing 17 games as Alex Ovechkin broke the career goals record and Washington reached the second round of the playoffs. Leonard had just 2 assists, but he's now counted on to be a regular contributor for the Capitals, even if his mindset was just to earn a roster spot. Nothing's guaranteed, so just going out there and try to prove that I can make the team and play at that level, Leonard said. Now over to golf news. U.S. versus Europe affair always contentious, sometimes uncomfortable. By Eddie Pelz, the AP. It's the biennial U.S. versus Europe matchup on the golf course, an affair that has grown more contentious, occasionally uncomfortable, and at times alarmingly petty over the past 4 decades. This year's edition has the added intrigue of being played in front of what is historically one of golf's most bombastic and least forgiving crowds that will converge at the country's toughest public course, Bethpage Black, on Long Island. For 51 weeks in a typical year, the dividing lines at the highest level of pro golf are not about countries or continents. This dynamic took a complicated twist 4 years ago when investors from Saudi Arabia piled billions into a breakaway league, LIV Golf, that fractured and forever changed this game. Back then, McIlroy from Northern Ireland was considered the good guy by lovers of the status quo because he refused to abandon the PGA Tour. Bryson DeChambeau from California was viewed differently because he left for LIV. A few years passed, both players won majors. McIlroy completed his career Grand Slam by capturing the Masters, and the reputation shifted. McIlroy was perceived as more aloof, while DeChambeau opened a new trove of fan worship by establishing himself as an entertaining fixture on YouTube. More recently, they've been exchanging barbs in the press, the freshest of which was McIlroy telling The Guardian, "To get attention, he will mention me or Scottie Scheffler or others." Those trends would seem to line up perfectly for an us-versus-them storyline in New York. The growingly detached European against American golfing everyman. But how to handicap the reaction for, say, Fleetwood or Patrick Cantlay? 5 weeks ago, American golf fans rejoiced when Fleetwood, the hard luck Brit known as Fairway Jesus for his flowing locks of brown hair, broke through for his first PGA Tour win and the $10 million prize that went with it at the Tour Championship. Among those he held off was Cantlay, an American who goes around the course in relative peace these days. Things haven't quite been the same for him since 2 years ago when his decision not to wear a USA hat at the Ryder Cup was speciously portrayed as a protest for not being paid to play in the event. Cantlay insisted then and now the hat simply didn't fit. Asked about it this week, Cantlay said, "I think we need to put 100% of our focus on playing the best golf we can and let the noise be exactly what it is, just noise." There was always been plenty of noise. Their past aside, if this Ryder Cup is like many recent versions, the Americans, even Cantlay, will be treated like the beloved home team, and the Europeans, even Fleetwood, will be treated with polite disregard. That would be under the best of circumstances. European captain Sam Torrance called the American celebration during the 1999 comeback at Brookline the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life. 8 years before that, bickering and bad feelings infiltrated a tight U.S. victory in what was billed, however, unfittingly, as the War on the Shore, while the country was on a high after wrapping up the Gulf War in Iraq. Just 2 years ago, McIlroy and Cantlay's caddy, Joe LaCava, got into a shouting match on the 18th green that led to McIlroy having to be restrained. That became a rallying cry for a European win in Rome. Now the stage is New York, and it brings potential for all sorts of reactions. Over to college football. Hoosiers paying heed to the Hawkeyes. IU coach knows all too well they will not beat themselves. By Dylan Sin, the Journal-Gazette. Kirk Cignetti and Kirk Ferentz have known one another for more than 40 years. It's a relationship that stretches back to the mid-1980s when Cignetti was a graduate assistant at Pittsburgh and Ferentz, who had been in Cignetti's role just a few years earlier, would occasionally come by the Panther offices to say hello. Four decades later, both are veteran head coaches, and their respect for one another was on display this week as Cignetti's Indiana gets set to take on Ferentz's Iowa on Saturday at Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City. Cignetti got the mutual admiration fest rolling Monday when he said explicitly that facing Iowa, 3-1, 1-0 in the Big Ten, on the road would be a more difficult test than the one his team handled with so much ease against then number 9 Illinois last Saturday at Memorial Stadium. Moving now to the 27th. Senior City still changing. Returning to Pine Valley a year after reorganization by James Krause, the Journal Gazette. In many ways, last year was the beginning of a new era for the Senior City Golf Championship. The Fort Wayne Golf Association ran last year's event at the Chestnut Hills Golf Club for the first time after merging with the tournament's longtime organizers, the Senior Golf Association of Fort Wayne. The FWGA modernized its scoring system through Blue Golf after years of manually scoring and established the Senior Player of the Year Award, which is decided based on the city tournament and other yearly Fort Wayne Golf Association senior events. It was a little bit of a learning curve for them to be able to sign in and become a member, but that also allows them to get into other events. Fort Wayne Golf Association President Brian Straley said, "I think with the transition, everything went great. Last year's tournament was also the first for Chris Schweitzer of Auburn after he turned 50 that July. Schweitzer's debut saw him win the title, shooting an even par 72 in both rounds to beat Derek Schneider by 2 shots. I've been looking forward to senior golf," Schweitzer said. "There's a good competition in a lot of senior venues, especially at the FWGA. The win was a surprise. I played pretty well that weekend and had a lot of fun with the guys." After a year of firsts in 2024, the 33rd Annual Senior City Championship that begins Sunday returns to the home of its inaugural tournament, the Pine Valley Country Club, for the first time in 22 years. The course marks the second year of the Fort Wayne Golf Association breakaway from the tournament's usual venues since 2012, the Orchard Ridge Golf Club and Coyote Creek Golf Club. Straley himself, a member at Pine Valley, said he talked with one of the tournament's previous operators, Michael Rakey, about the previous method of selecting venues designed for cost efficiency. "He had a system he used well," Straley said. "I told him, and he knew, that the system wasn't going to work anymore. Now it's gotten to where the golf courses have so many members and so many member events. We used to be able to dictate what we want, but now they dictate. It's going to be a little more expensive. We thought if it's going to be more expensive, why not try and attract more premier courses? Because those courses are not giving deals anymore either, and I don't blame them." Pine Valley opened in 1966, hosted the first Senior City Tournament in 1992 when Ron Vonberg won the tournament. John Churchwald won a rain-shortened tournament in 1997 to become a 2-time champion, and Sam Till Jr. won his first of 6 championships in Pine Valley's last Senior City in 2003. Since the last time it hosted the Senior City, Pine Valley has had a change in ownership with renovations to the facilities. Schweitzer played there earlier this summer and called Pine Valley one of the best courses in Fort Wayne, complimenting its maintenance and ability to stay playable no matter the weather or size of the tournament. "The changes they've made over the years, they've been really good ones," Schweitzer said. "It's firm, but it's fair. You can't stray too far from the fairway without catching a couple of lucky breaks. It's a good test of golf, and it should be a really good venue for this competitive field." As of Monday, over 40 golfers were registered for the tournament. On top of an overall champion, the field will be divided by age groups of 5-year increments to decide division championships. "I see a lot of names that have won and can win," Schweitzer said. "There's really solid competition. I think it's a little bit more competitive than last year. It's guys over 50, but there are quite a few great golfers at 50 to 60s in the Fort Wayne area." Schweitzer is tied with Ron Schmucker, 59, at 285 points in the Senior Player of the Year standings after teaming up to win the FWGA Senior Two-Man Best Ball event on June 14th at Brookwood Golf Club. Schmucker is the 3-time defending champion of the 55 to 59 division heading into a tournament at his home course. He finished tied for fourth overall in last year's Senior City at 8 over with Tim Dobas and Kip Barker. Steve Vernasco, who's 67, and Matt Schmidt, 59, won the senior two-man combined at Coyote Creek on September 6th. The duo is tied for third in the year-end standings behind Switcher and Schmucker. Dr. Bill Argus, 70, became the first overall champion to come from the ages of 65 to 69 when he won the 2023 Senior City at Coyote Creek. The oldest entry in the tournament, according to Blue Golf, will be 93-year-old Bob Younger, whose history in the tournament dates back to its beginning, since winning the age 55 to 59 division title in the inaugural event in 1992. Younger has won division titles in 1995 in the 60 to 64 age group, 2001 the 65 to 69 age group, 2004 the 65 to 69 age group, and 2020 75 and over. Back to the NFL action. High-scoring Colts top rusher Taylor set for clash with Rams by Dan Greenspan, the AP. If ever a loss could beat a team twice, the Rams' 33-26 defeat of the Philadelphia Eagles last Sunday certainly has all the ingredients. The stunning collapse had everything from red zone inefficiency, self-inflicted gaffes, to two blocked field goals, the latter as time expired to erase a chance of salvaging the win. In spite of the staggering loss, Rams coach Sean McVay believes his team has what it takes to move past it when the surprising Indianapolis Colts visit Sunday. I like to resolve, and I like the look in the guys' eyes right now after the game today as we're looking at it for us to be able to move forward the right way against a great Indianapolis team coming in here on Sunday, McVay said. The Rams, who are 2-1, are trying to focus on what they did well to build a 19-point lead against the defending Super Bowl champs in the third quarter, including keeping Philly's multifaceted rushing offense in check. That will be a key to containing the Colts, who have the NFL's top rusher in Jonathan Taylor. Taylor has 338 yards rushing, including 102 yards and all three of his touchdowns on the ground in a 41-20 thumping of the Tennessee Titans last week. He's so great, I mean, you never know when he's going to break a tackle, Colts receiver Michael Pittman Jr. said. There were two separate runs where he broke like five tackles, like I've never seen it before. The Rams have the best pass rush in the league, with third-year outside linebacker Byron Young accounting for four of the defense's 12 sacks. The Colts have the best pass protection in football, allowing only two sacks. McVay credited Indianapolis player-to-play-to-play consistency for that success, noting his group must have success on early downs in order to be able to pressure Daniel Jones. I think they've had like two second and 11 pluses the whole year, McVay said. They have punted once. They've been being really efficient. They're being efficient in both phases, both the run and the pass. Pittman will make sure a rare trip back to his home state with an opportunity to move into fifth on the Colts reception list. He needs seven catches to pass tight end Dallas Clark, who had 427. Pittman was born in Bakersfield, California, and starred at USC in college before being drafted ahead of his fellow Colts playmaker, Taylor, as both were second-round picks in 2020. That's probably the biggest flex that I have, like, in the whole NFL. Like, they drafted me before JT, and now he's the best player in football, Pittman said. Jones is reviving his career after six errant seasons with the New York Giants. He has completed 71.6% of his passes for 816 yards and three touchdowns without an interception, while adding three more scores as a runner. As for that new name, Indiana Jones nickname, I mean, I don't have a strong opinion on it either way, he said Wednesday. Over to the Chicago Bears. Quarterback stellar play has Bears excited by Mark Anderson, the AP. Maybe this was the Caleb Williams many expected when he was drafted first overall last year. Or perhaps Dallas defense is just that bad. The Bears' game at Las Vegas on Sunday might be a clue as to whether Williams' four-touchdown performance in a blowout victory over the Cowboys last weekend was a sign of what's to come, or if it was simply a high mark in an otherwise inconsistent early career. I can't say enough, really, about Williams' approach, Chicago coach Ben Johnson said. When you have the approach that's right, we're going to continue to see him get better. Kudos to him. He won Offensive Player of the Week there for the NFC, and he came in Wednesday completely unfazed by it. I tried to recognize him in front of the group, and he wasn't having it. The Raiders are going with the approach that the Williams who tore apart the Cowboys is the one they should be prepared to face. He's a very, very special athlete, and he's got great sense, great awareness about throwing the football and running the football. Raiders coach Pete Carroll said he'll be a prolific scrambler. By the time we check out his ears, he's really good at it and throws really well on the run, too. Carroll said Johnson's influence as a first-year coach is already coming through in Williams' play. Few dispute Williams' big arm and the elite athleticism, but he often holds the ball too long and takes unnecessary hits and sacks in search of a big play. The pressure is on Williams in his second season to show why he was worth the top pick. Beating the Cowboys soundly was a positive step in that direction. A similar performance against the Raiders would be another one. We have a tall task at hand, Williams said. Every week is important. Every game, every moment. That was a good moment we had Sunday, and it's time to move on to the Raiders. Chicago went from blowing an 11-point lead in the season opener against Minnesota to nearly matching a franchise record for points allowed in a 52-21 blowout at Detroit. But against Dallas, it was a different story. The Bears got four takeaways, including a spectacular forced fumble by Tyreek Stevenson. They also had three interceptions, two by linebacker Tremaine Edmonds, and held Dak Prescott to 251 yards passing while sacking him twice and picking him off two times. The work we put in as a collective, it matters, and it's going to show up because we work hard and we trust each other, Stevenson said. It's allowing us to believe in each other and trust each other and know that we're going to be out there having each other's back and play free. Bears running back DeAndre Swift is averaging 3.5 yards per carry, and rookie Kyle Mananjai is at 3.4 per attempt. Johnson said the team is very conscious of the problems in the run game. I've alluded to it in the past that it can take a little bit of time before all this meshes and all gels together, he said. We've got some new faces up front that haven't played a ton of ball. That's also part of the process. It's all for the runners to understand what we intend to do with some of these play calls, where we want the ball to hit, and then at the end of the day, they all take their natural skill set and they make something big out of it. Now moving to September 29th. In golf, in the Ryder Cup news, Europe wins a Ryder with birdie on the 18th. Doug Ferguson, the AP. Team Europe is taking the Ryder Cup back across the Atlantic Ocean, leaving the Americans to search for answers in what is becoming a lopsided series. Shane Lowry added his name to Irish lore in the Ryder Cup with a 6-foot birdie putt on the 18th hole Sunday that assured Europe of retaining the cup. Tyrrell Hatton halved his match to make Europe an outright winner for the 11th time in the last 15 matches. Luke Donald became the first European captain to win back-to-back in the Ryder Cup since Tony Jacklin in 1985 and 87. He had 11 of the same 12 players who won big in Rome 2 years ago. Even more impressive was doing it on U.S. soil at Bethpage Black, no less, with hostile fans that were loud and vulgar and relentless. The final score tally, Europe 15, United States 13, was the only real surprise. The Americans at least showed a pulse and made their opponents sweat more than anyone imagined, storming back from the largest Sunday deficit ever against Europe. There was a moment where a comeback actually looked possible. Cameron Young and Justin Thomas won matches on the 18th hole. Bryson DeChambeau charged from 5 down to earn a half. Scottie Scheffler avoided getting blanked by winning his heavyweight match against Roy McIlroy. Lowry, who contended with the worst of the New York crowds all week, had the last word. He birdied 3 of the last 4 holes in his final putt, will put him alongside other Irishmen who have produced Ryder Cup heroics. Graham McDowell at Celtic Manor in 2010. Darren Clark and his emotional week at the K Club. Paul McGinley at the Belfry in 2002. Russell Henley had a 1-up lead and twice had 10-foot birdie putts on the closing holes. He left both of them short. The last one set the stage for Lowry, who made the putt and set off a wild celebration as thousands of fans streamed through the exits. Lowry said to his caddy walking up the 18th, "I have a chance to do the coolest thing in my life," and he did just that. The Americans tied a Ryder Cup record by winning 8.5 points from the 12 singles matches. They needed 10 points. The Americans still have a 27-16-2 lead in the series that date back to 1927, but the modern Ryder Cup didn't start until 1979 when continental Europe was invited to the party. Since then, Europe has captured the Cup 13 out of 19 times. McIlroy had said winning a road Ryder Cup was among the biggest accomplishments in golf. It's just not all that unusual. Europe has won 5 of the last 10 away from home. Europe's best players starred at Bethpage Black, even as New York fans hurled abuse, building a record 7-point lead going into the 12 singles matches. Europe put a half point on the board before a shot was hit. Victor Hovland, who had a summer neck injury flare-up on Sunday, was forced to withdraw. Harris English, whose name had been put in the secret envelope, also sat out, and the match was declared halved. That meant the Americans had to win 9 of the 11 matches and have another, and they put up an astonishing fight, finally hearing cheers for the U.S. instead of only vitriol towards Europe. "They played better than us," said U.S. Captain Keegan Bradley, who said his one regret might be the way he set up the course. Bethpage Black has a reputation of being a beast, but the rough was trimmed back, and then heavy rain during the week made the green soft. There were birdies galore, a rarity at the Black. There was hostility from the crowd, typical of this region and this public golf course. And there was a European celebration, which is becoming all too familiar. Back to college football. "Wild Week, IU Survives, Notre Dame Arrives" by Dylan Sin, the Journal-Gazette. It is difficult to decide whether Notre Dame's offense or defense was more impressive Saturday, at least compared to expectations. Against an Arkansas offense that had been one of the best in the country, the Irish defense was solid. Worlds better than the porous unit that surrendered 32.7 points per game over the first three contests of the season. The offense, meanwhile, was stratospheric, eclipsing even its own lofty standard with touchdowns on each of its 6 possessions in the first half. Over to the NFL, "Goff's 2 TDs passes put Lions over the Browns" by the AP. Jared Goff's connection with Amon-Ra St. Brown is so good, it helped the Detroit Lions overcome a relatively lackluster game on offense to rout the Cleveland Browns. Goff threw 2 touchdown passes to St. Brown. Khalif Raymond returned a punt 65 yards for another score, and the Lions beat the Cleveland Browns 34-10 on Sunday. Goff was 16 of 27 for 168 yards with a 2-yard touchdown pass to St. Brown late in the first half, and an 8-yard toss to him in the fourth quarter, giving the All-Pro receiver 6 receptions in the last 3 games. Over to the Bears. Bears Blackwell blocks field goal. "An out-of-body experience," he says, "saves the game," by Mark Anderson, the AP. In the end, the Bears' win over the Raiders came down to Josh Blackwell getting a hand on a field goal attempt, but he's not even in that position if Chicago doesn't put together a red zone stand to stay within a possession. Quarterback Caleb Williams doesn't overcome a fierce Las Vegas pass rush, and his own inconsistencies to lead a winning drive and a struggling running game doesn't produce the go-ahead points. Chicago's defense did force a field goal. Williams did calmly lead that winning drive, and that final series was capped by DeAndre Swift's 2-yard scoring run with 1:34 left. That all set up Blackwell's block of a 54-yard kick by Daniel Carlson about a minute later, and the Bears beat the Raiders 25-24. "That's a huge character win for our team," Bears coach Ben Johnson said. "I just love it for them." Blackwell called the block an out-of-body experience. He came in nearly untouched from the left side, dived and deflected the ball. He raced down the field in celebration as teammates chased him. "We got close the first 2 field goals," Blackwell said. "I was like, I'm going to time this one up." The Bears, who are 2-2, became the second team to win 800 regular season games, joining the Green Bay Packers, who had 812 going into Sunday night's game at Dallas. The Raiders, who are 1-3, have lost three straight. Chicago had four takeaways for the second game in a row, allowing the Bears to survive a middling performance by Williams and Johnson's offense. They gained 271 yards, just 69 on the ground. The Bears rushed for 2 yards in the first half. That was their lowest output in a half since totaling minus one against Minnesota in Week 17 in 2017. It also was the fewest allowed by the Raiders in a first half since Kansas City had minus two in Week 15 in 2012. Rome Odunze, playing in his hometown, became the first Bears receiver to catch at least one touchdown pass in the first four games of a season since Alshon Jeffrey's six-game streak in 2014. The Bears also spoiled a breakout performance by Ashton Jaunte, who rushed for 138 yards on 21 carries and became the first Raiders rookie with three touchdowns in a game since Bo Jackson in 1987 against Seattle. Jaunte rushed for a TD and caught two scoring passes. Jaunte also lost a fumble, one of four turnovers for the Raiders. Smith threw three interceptions for the second time in 3 weeks and passed for just 117 yards with two touchdowns. The guys deserve to get this win, and I let those guys down, Smith said. There's a lot of things I'm going to have to fix within myself, and that's a reality. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I've got to be a lot better, and I am a lot better, but it hasn't showed up. Las Vegas' Brock Bowers caught five passes for 46 yards, extending his streak to 21 games with at least two catches to tie the longest by a tight end to open a career. Detroit's Sam Laporta set the record in 2023 and 24. The Raiders took a 24-19 lead on Carlson's 29-yard field goal with 6:45 left, but missed an opportunity to make it a two-possession lead after having first and goal at the 7. Jaunte lost 4 yards on two carries, and Dante Thornton dropped a third-down pass at the 2. In baseball news from September 29th, Reds make playoffs despite dropping season finale. By the AP, the Cincinnati Reds lost their regular season finale 4-2 to the Milwaukee Brewers on Sunday, but still reached the playoffs because the New York Mets fell to the Miami Marlins. Cincinnati entered Sunday knowing it could reach the playoffs if it beat Milwaukee or if the Mets lost to Miami. The Mets' 4-0 loss to the Marlins enabled the Reds to get the National League's third and final wild card spot. The Reds and Mets both finished the season at 83-79, but the Reds owned the head-to-head tiebreaker after going 4-2 against the Mets this season. The Reds head to Los Angeles to begin a wild card series against the defending World Series champion, LA Dodgers, on Tuesday. Cincinnati took an early 2-0 lead on leadoff homers by Eli De La Cruz in the second inning and TJ Friedl in the third. De La Cruz hit his 402-foot shot off Freddy Peralta, while Friedl delivered a 416-foot blast off D.L. Hall. Milwaukee cut the lead to 2-1 when Jackson Chourio and Bryce Turang opened the third inning with back-to-back doubles. Other news and scores. It was the White Sox over the Nationals 8-0. American League, Red Sox 4, Tigers 3. It was the Guardians over the Rangers 9-8. Over to the National League, the Cubs beat the Cardinals 2-0, while the Marlins beat the Mets 4-0. Back to local golf news. From the City Senior Championship, Barron's brings it home. By James Krause of Journal-Gazette. Throughout his round at Pine Valley Country Club, Carl Barron said his heart was racing. Barron's began Monday as the leader of the Fort Wayne Golf Association Senior City Championship, a tournament he's been trying to win for 5 years, even finishing runner-up twice, but never could get over the hump. "It's been on my calendar for 6 years," Barron said. "I've circled it like this is an important tournament to play well in, so I've looked forward to trying to have an opportunity to win it. It was a nerve-wracking day. I was a little nervous, honestly, the entire day." The nerves and racing heart finally subsided, and the trophy he's had his eyes on for years was finally his. Barron shot 141 over two rounds, that's one under par, to win the city senior title over runner-up Joe Hayden and third-place Jason Smith. Barron's Wind comes in the tournament's return to Pine Valley, the course where the tournament started in 1992 and where Barron's has been a member for over 20 years. "I was really looking forward to getting this tournament back to Pine Valley," Barron said. "The original tournament was here, and it's been quite a while since it's been played at Pine Valley. Having a little bit of course knowledge, understanding the greens, I was excited about playing here." After shooting 3-under par in the first round on Sunday, Barron started his round strong with birdies on holes 4 and 5. The 55-year-old recorded back-to-back bogeys on holes 8 and 9, and then two more in the back nine on 13 and 15. "I made some good saves early, made a couple of birdies early, kind of calmed the nerves," Barron said. "Then coming down the stretch, just trying to make pars. I watched the leaderboard a bit online and kind of knew where I was stood, so I'm just trying to make pars coming in." Hayden, who finished at 1-over par, had the exact opposite approach to the final round. After shooting 3-over par on Sunday, Hayden had 3 birdies on the front nine and 5 overall to put himself in a position to challenge Barron's. "I really had nothing to lose," Hayden said. "I was aggressive on my approach shots and made a couple of long cuts. That kind of gets the juices flowing." Hayden's chance of a major comeback were upended with a water hazard on hole 15 that led to a double bogey. He never checked the leaderboard until the second to the last hole of the round, but wasn't surprised to see that he'd climbed up to second place. "I knew that the course was playing super long, but it was set up tough," Hayden said. "I knew if I could get under par for the tournament, that I'd have a chance. I looked at the scoreboard and peeked just to kind of see how my friend Carl was doing. I was happy to put a little pressure on him. He's a good friend of mine, so it was a fun day." Smith, who finished 2-over par for the tournament, got off to a rough start in the back nine. Nestled between bogeys on holes 10 and 13 was a double bogey on hole 11 and a birdie on hole 12. He recovered with 2 birdies over the final 5 holes, giving him a tournament high 8 over both rounds. "I knew I had to," Smith said of his recovery. "I knew where Carl was at, and he wasn't coming back to me. I just got maybe a bit more aggressive, hitting it a little more harder, and I made a couple of birdies. My putt on hole 18 was dumb luck, but I'll take it." Derek Schneider and Matt Schmidt tied for fourth at 4-over. Defending champ Chris Schweitzer was sixth at 5-over, and two-time champion David Dumas finished seventh at 6-over. Ron Schmucker finished 8th at 8-over. Kevin Irons and Derek Moore tied for 9th at 9-over. Mike Davis finished 12th overall and won a second 60-69 division title at 15-over. Kip Barker and Matt Santilli tied for 14th overall and second in the division at 17-over. Two-time overall champion William Argus came back from down 2 strokes to win the 70-79 division title, shooting 4-over in round 2 and 10-over for the tournament. First-round leader Gary Peissert finished second at 15-over par, and Larry Snell took third at 18-over. Jeff Gilmore won the age 80 and over championship at 27-over par, beating Bob Younger by 6 strokes and Ron Caudill by 7. Back to Ryder Cup news, McIlroy fuming about fans by the AP. Rory McIlroy helped Europe win the Ryder Cup and then called out the hostile New York crowd for unacceptable and abusive behavior. Over his 5 matches at Bethpage Black, McIlroy endured a torrent of insults about everything from his personal life to past failures on the golf course. People shouted out as he lined up to swing and putt. His wife was hit by a cup of beer. "What happened here this week is not acceptable," McIlroy said on Sunday after going 3-1-1 to help Europe beat the U.S. 15-13. His lone loss came in a Sunday singles match with world number one Scottie Scheffler, who had also played in all 5 sessions. That was more of a slog than a pristine shot-for-shot battle of the world's top 2 players. It was McIlroy's most blunt assessment yet of a New York crowd that Europe fully expected to be rowdy and passionate. Captain Luke Donald even gave players virtual reality goggles to get used to the noise, but maybe not this crass or downright obnoxious. The 36-year-old Northern Irishman, who came to Bethpage on a mission to win his second Ryder Cup on U.S. soil, sometimes pushed back at his hecklers for stepping away and a shot until the riled masses settled down. On Saturday, he told boisterous fans to shut the blank up before knocking his approach to 3 feet to set up a clinching putt in a morning foursomes match. When a fan yelled, "You're not that good, Rory," he responded, "I'm blank very good." "I am," McIlroy added at the winner's press conference, "really good." While there was more golf to play, McIlroy stayed guarded in his post-match interviews. Asked on Saturday if he thought fans had crossed a line, he said, "People can be their own judge of whether they took it too far or not. With the crowds gone and the Ryder Cup in hand, the 5-time major champion let loose. I don't think we should ever accept that in golf," he said. "I think golf should be held to a higher standard than what was seen out there this week." In college football news, defensive coordinator lauded by Irish's coach. By Dylan Sin, the Journal-Gazette. Notre Dame's coach Marcus Freeman had some effusive praise for Irish defensive coordinator Chris Ash on Monday, following his team's 56-13 win over Arkansas on Saturday. Ash had come in for a significant criticism after the Irish gave up 32.7 points per game over the first 3 games of the season. Freeman stood by him, refusing to remove play-calling duties from the first-year coordinator, and on Monday said the former Rutgers head coach had shown him a lot during preparations in recent weeks. "I hadn't been in the fire with Coach Ash," Freeman said. "I've learned this week who he is. When he's in the fire, he's a competitor and he's a leader. He's not pointing fingers at other people. He's saying, I have to get this fixed. He's done a really good job of being crystal clear on his expectations. Hey, we failed in this area. Let's attack it and fix it. Let's be crystal clear as coaches, as players, on what we're expecting here." And he doesn't waver. He just goes to work. In Colts news, Colts receiver owns up to TD negating fumble, by Michael Marotte, the AP. Indianapolis receiver Adonai Mitchell opened Monday's team meeting by accepting responsibility for Sunday's costly gaffe. Now comes the harder part, proving himself all over again. One day after Mitchell started to celebrate his first career TD before crossing the goal line and fumbled the ball out of the end zone, erasing the score in the Sunday's 27-20 loss to the LA Rams, Colts Shane Steichen was still being peppered by questions about Mitchell's miscue and a litany of others, including having only 10 defenders on the field when Tutu Atwell caught the tie-breaking 88-yard TD pass with 1:33 to play. That one, Steichen said, was his fault. "It shouldn't happen. It's unacceptable, and it starts with me as a head coach," said Steichen, now in his third season with Indianapolis. "I've got to recognize that we've only got 10 and call a timeout there. It can't happen." Steichen wasn't looking to assess blame. He just wants his team focused on fixing the mistakes. Though Steichen said he did not consider benching Mitchell after the early miscue because the Colts needed his playmaking ability, Steichen acknowledged he did meet with their second-year receiver Monday. Mitchell also nullified another touchdown Sunday when he was called for holding on a 53-yard tackle-breaking scoring run from Jonathan Taylor with about 2 minutes to go. "He spoke to the team at the start of the meeting," Steichen said. "I had a conversation with him today in my office, letting him know this moment obviously doesn't define who you are as a person, but he knows going forward he's going to have to earn it with how he practices and how he prepares." Steichen wasn't the only one offering public support to Mitchell, who was criticized last season for his propensity for dropping passes. Mitchell did not speak with reporters Monday, but two of his teammates did, and both were quick to suggest it happens. Besides, Mitchell wasn't the only one messing up. Daniel Jones threw his first 2 interceptions with Indianapolis, the second essentially ending the game, and cornerback Mekhi Blackman fell down near the line of scrimmage as he tried to defend Atwell on the game-changing play, leaving the Colts essentially down 2 players. "Mistakes happen, like we're all human," left tackle Bernard Raimann said. "We all try our hardest, and it was great to hear from Mitchell. We all take accountability for the mistakes we've made. It takes guts to stand up in front of the team and acknowledge that, but we all know who Mitchell is. He's a guy that shows up early, who gets his extra work in, and is a freak athlete." What's working? Tight end Tyler Warren. The rookie continued his strong start by scoring his first career TD on a 2-yard run and catching 5 more passes for 70 yards. Warren joined former Houston Oiler Alvin Reed as the only tight ends in league history to post 70 or more yards receiving in 3 of their first 4 career games. What needs help? Penalties. In addition to all of Indianapolis' other problems, the Colts committed 11 penalties for 88 yards. Stock up, safety Nick Cross. After finishing among last season's leaders in tackles, he's off to another strong start. He entered the game with 20 tackles and added 14 more at L.A. Cross continues to prove he can be a tackling machine. Stock down, cornerback Xavien Howard. The NFL's 2-time interceptions leader was a late addition to the roster because of injuries. Indianapolis thought the reunion of Howard and new defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo could work. Instead, Howard has not played well through the first 4 weeks, creating questions about how long Howard's stay in Indianapolis will be. And the injury bug? Indianapolis played without 3 starters Sunday. Right guard Matt Goncalves, receiver Alec Pierce, and cornerback Kenny Moore II. It's unclear whether any of them will be ready this weekend. Indianapolis also lost backup running back Tyler Goodson with a groin injury against the Rams. He did not return. Key number, 3. Indianapolis had 3 turnovers, ending its 3-game streak with none. And the next steps? Indianapolis needs to play much cleaner football if it intends to rebound against the Raiders on Sunday. Expect Steichen to reemphasize 4 points this week. No turnovers. Avoid penalties. Make sure 11 players are on the field at all times. And hold on to the ball until it's clearly across the goal line. Now over to the Bears. Bears, beautiful mess. Coach says team took step back in win. By Gene Chamberlain, the AP. For the first time since the season opener, Chicago Bears coach Ben Johnson disliked much of what he saw from his team. That changed near the very end of Sunday's game against the Raiders. Johnson couldn't complain about the result, a flawed 25-24 victory sealed by Josh Blackwell's blocked field goal in the final minutes, after the Bears' offense struggled throughout and the defense failed to stop the run. After improving to 2-2 with the franchise's 800th victory, the Bears have a bye week to try to fix their huge issues. When you look at it as a whole, it was a mess, man, Johnson said Monday. I'm just not proud of what we put on tape. I think it was a reflection of myself. I always take it personally. I saw us get better for the first 3 weeks and in a lot of ways on offense, and then this was just a little bit of a step back for us. The Bears ran for only 2.7 yards per carry while giving up 7.7 yards per rush. They couldn't block Max Crosby and switch tackles, pulling the left side starter Braxton Jones and inserting rookie Ozzie Tapio into the lineup at right tackle while moving Theo Benedict to left tackle. What did work was Caleb Williams in the comeback mode. His 22 of 37 effort for 212 yards included a final drive for DeAndre Swift's go-ahead 2-yard touchdown run in the final 2 minutes. Williams' performance in the clutch made up for defensive flaws and running game trouble. End of the day, the most important thing is limiting the opposing offense and the number of points scored, Johnson said. If that means we're going to giving up some rushing yards, but yet we're keeping them low on the scoreboard, we'll manage with that. No one likes seeing 6 yards, 7 yards per carry. That's not what Chicago Bears football is about. That's not what we want to be about. So we're working very diligently on getting better in that regard. What's working? The pass coverage couldn't have been better. 2 interceptions by safety Kevin Byard, another by cornerback Tyreek Stevenson, and holding the Raiders to 2 of 8 on 3rd down made it clear the Bears have depth as they are playing without starting cornerbacks Jalen Johnson and Kyler Gordon. Chicago has a top-ranked defense on 3rd down, according to opponents, to convert 29.3% of the time. What needs help? The defensive line failed to stop the run and didn't sack Geno Smith either. The Bears allowed rookie Ashton Jaunte to rush for 138 yards, including a 64-yard touchdown. They were playing without defensive tackle Grady Jarrett and linebacker T.J. Edwards. Stock up. Williams was solid in the 2-minute offense and drove the Bears 37 yards to a field goal at the end of the first half, and then the winning touchdown. So it's almost like that little bit of pressure you put on him. He just thrives in and really excels, Johnson said. That's been consistent ever since we came into this building. So I'm not surprised it turned out that way. He really was good at the end of the first half. He really was good at the end of the game. Stock down. Jones was pulled at halftime, even though the Bears allowed just one sack. It's not clear whether starting right tackle Darnell Wright will return from an arm injury for Chicago's next game, or if Trapillo or the undrafted Benedict will start in one of the tackle spots again. Jones has been a starter since he was a fifth-round rookie in 2022 and is a free agent after this season. Over to October 1st, Northside grad finally fulfilling promise for the Irish. Safety Johnson, whose first season was lost in injury, was elevated to starter last week by Dylan Sin, the Journal-Gazette. Tay Johnson was ready for the ball when Notre Dame's Logan Thomas rushed in and blocked a Texas A&M punt in the opening minutes of the team's clash September 13th. Johnson was not surprised. He had been visualizing the moment for days. All week, I was just telling myself, if somebody blocks it, I want to be there to scoop it up, said Johnson, a former Northside star. Little do I know what happened on the first punt of the game. Johnson did exactly as he had hoped, grabbing the ball on one bounce and then racing the remaining 20 yards for the accomplished with much of his family and from Fort Wayne for the game. In one sense, the play was simply an example of Johnson doing his job. His responsibility was to watch the punter for a potential fake and keep him contained if he tried to escape, a role that left him in perfect position to grab the ball. In another sense, though, the play was a breakthrough for the redshirt freshman. After missing most of a foot injury suffered during preseason camp, the lightning strike touchdown felt like an arrival, a significant signifier that he is beginning to make good on the enormous talent he brought with him from the Summit City to South Bend. That was a turning point for me, to be honest, Johnson said. I was just grateful because of what happened last year. I got hurt, and to me it felt like my growth is finally showing. My hard work is finally showing, and I get to show to the country who I really am. In the week since, Johnson's breakout has only accelerated. He ended up playing key snaps in crunch time against Texas A&M because starting safety Aiden Shuler was ejected for targeting early in the fourth quarter. He then started against Purdue while Shuler served his targeting-related suspension in the first half. Against Arkansas on Saturday, he was officially elevated to the first string, starting alongside Shuler. That meteoric ascent has been made possible by Johnson's play, which has been rock solid. The former legend star has 14 tackles, 13 of them solo stops, and has broken up two passes, crucially for Notre Dame, which has been plagued early in the season by big plays against its pass defense. Johnson has done a good job preventing the Irish getting beaten over the top while he's patrolling the secondary. It's simple for my job, Johnson said. Don't let anything over our head. I'm the protector of the defense, and I take that job very seriously. The Razorbacks had a chunk gain that looked as though it might turn into an even bigger pickup or even a touchdown several times last week, only for Johnson to bring down the ball carrier. His performance helped the Irish hold on to one of the best offenses in the country to 13 points and none in the second half. For Notre Dame, plays like that are not surprising. The 6'2", 192-pound Johnson has been making them since spring practice. We get out there and this safety starts showing up and flashing and making a lot of plays, first-year Irish defensive coordinator Chris Ash said back in July. He's got good size. He can run. He's getting his hands on balls, and you can see him breaking out of the middle, like, man, who the hell is this? All that playmaking is in the offseason wasn't quite enough for Johnson to earn a starting spot at the outset of the season. Heading into the opener against Miami, he was listed as a backup to veteran Jalen Stroman, a Virginia Tech transfer. But he was on the field late against the Hurricanes and made a key tackle, then stood out with several important tackles and a pass breakup after being forced into action against A&M. He hasn't looked back since. For Johnson, however, little has changed since before he moved up on the depth chart. We have a saying in our DB group, if you're out there, you're a one, Johnson said. That was always my mindset. So even when I wasn't starting, I always thought and I always knew I was a one. That confidence has always been evident to Notre Dame. If you listen to Tay-Tay, he'll be the best wideout and the best defensive back, Irish coach Marcus Freeman said earlier this season. Now it's showing on the field. It's a type of confidence that is Johnson believing the punt block will not be the only touchdown he scores this season. I don't really want to talk about that one, he said, laughing when asked about a pass breakup against Arkansas that could have been an interception with a lot of green space in front of him. I feel like it'll come around. I just trust in my ability, and the coach has trusted me, so that's all the trust I need. Eventually a pick six will come. I just got to keep doing my job. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Doug Campbell with Sports and Review. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library.